Good afternoon. The nature of your performance obligation for this month in relation to IFRS 15 is predominantly to consider the feedback received on the proposed clarifications, redeliberate the proposals, and make final decisions. Agenda papers 7A to 7G are all capable of being distinct but not distinct in the context of BED. So we expect you to discuss these papers over today and tomorrow and satisfy your single performance obligation by 3:00 PM UK time tomorrow roughly. So it's just two papers for tomorrow, seven, agenda papers 7F and G.
You should have some concerns about collectability.
Enforceability.
I have a question for the TRG on this one.
So you have another performance obligation, which is agenda paper 7H, which is certainly not immaterial in the context of the meeting, but it is certainly not connected to the exposure draft or the redeliberations of the exposure draft, which will also be discussed today, later towards the end of today's meeting. Now, on a serious note, for convenience, we'll tee up and open up for discussion for each of the papers separately, and for some papers, we will tee up and open the meeting for discussion on each of the topics in the paper. Now, turning first to agenda paper 7A. This includes a summary of the overall comments of respondents that prepays their feedback on the specific proposals in the exposure draft that is included in each of the separate papers. In respect of the high hurdle set by the IASB when considering whether to amend IFRS 15, we have summarized the feedback in paragraphs 6 to 12 of the paper. Most of the respondents generally agreed with the high hurdle set by the IASB. In respect of the status of convergence of IFRS 15 and topic 606, we have laid out the feedback by type of respondents in paragraphs 13 to 29 of the paper. Many respondents expressed a general concern about the IASB and FASB proposing different amendments to clarify the application of originally converged requirements. A majority of the respondents suggested that the explanations in the basis for conclusions on the ED about the implications of the different words should be incorporated into the basis for conclusions of IFRS 15. A few preparers and almost all accounting firms emphasize the importance of convergence, especially when the boards think that the different words would result in largely the same outcomes. They think that the words should be the same if the boards intended similar outcomes. We have also laid out the feedback from ASAF in paragraphs 30 to 33 of the paper. We do not have any questions for you, but we would like to know if you have any questions on the paper.
Very short comment. Now, simply, you know, we're facing a situation, you know, big four firms, they express some kind of the unanimous views to us. But as I understand, you know, among its member regions, you know, people have different views. I just want to, you know, let everybody know what I heard in some areas, it may not present what present here as a firm's view because it is a firm.
Pat?
I just wanted to make an observation, and this applies to all of these papers, so I'll kind of tee it up here rather than repeat it. If we had created a TRG in and of ourselves to work on these questions or issues, I would be much more amenable to embracing the principles that the staff articulate in paper 7B, which is this notion of setting a high hurdle to change a standard at this point in time because of the unintended consequences. And the potential for an unwarranted burden. The education that I've gone through over the last year tells me that notwithstanding the preparation that many companies are going through, the likelihood that there are a large number of companies ready to kind of push a button and move forward with this is highly remote. And if you disagree with that, I challenge the staff to actually provide examples and actually have companies write in and say, we're about to, you know, go forward with this. Please don't make changes. I mean, that's the kind of evidence I'm looking for. As a result of the fact that we've created these TRGs, we have to live with that. We've gone through a process. People have stopped what they're doing. They're watching, they're listening, they're hearing. And if the original intent was to come together, okay, as you said, many of the big firms are saying, we'd like you to continue to stay together, have the same words, to avoid the potential for different outcomes. I am very, very empathetic to that view in light of the fact of where we are. As I said, if this was an ISB-only project, I would be taking a much different perspective. But I more or less, you know, live with the hand I'm dealt. And the hand I was dealt is to work with the TRG in conjunction with the FASB's TRG. And so at this point in time, where each of these issues are presented to me, the filter or kind of paradigm I'm using for my decisions is, would I have accepted this proposal prior to the original publication in May of 2014? And in those cases where I could live with it and where the outcome that the FASB has developed is acceptable to me, my view is, let's go with identical words, identical changes to illustrative examples, identical basis for conclusions. Where I wouldn't have voted for it, and I'll give an example, the sales tax issue, where I don't like the proposed change that the FASB has tentatively adopted here. I don't believe in making that change. But where, in fact, I could support that change, I'd say, let's go ahead. Why? Because I really think it creates value for preparers and the accounting firms and regulators in the long run. And so while it violates, so to speak, this notion of a high hurdle, we're beyond that. We're past that. We crossed that bridge. So let's do what's in the best interests of the people who have to live with this standard,
sure,
and have to apply it. And so that's kind of where I'm coming out. So, for example, I'm prejudging the outcome here, but take an example like performance obligations or licensing. I would like to have the same words, the same outcomes in both standards. I really think that is in our best interest.
Ian, you want to?
Yeah, just your first comment, Pat, before you got onto the convergence.
Sure.
You were saying there's not many companies kind of ready to go now. So you're challenging the stability criteria. But I think there are.
And that's based on surveys that I've seen published by public accounting firms, both ad hoc surveys done at conferences that I've seen, where you have a variety of people who are saying they're developing plans and they're assessing, you know, the consequences at all different levels within an organization. But companies that are actually able and willing and intending to early adopt, for example,
that's not the point we're making in this.
Very few and far between.
Yeah, but we're talking about companies that are beginning the process. And they can't begin the process unless they've got a relatively stable platform and know what it is they're supposed to be reporting.
I disagree with you. I think you can actually, and in fact, I think we as a board and staff and the accounting firms are telling people you can begin the process. You can begin to assess the consequences of this. You may not know exactly how to apply, for example, the guidance on performance obligations, but you can begin the process to assess what types of contracts you have. Okay, who are your customers, and what types of performance obligations do I think I have in light of the existing guidance, and how that might change? So you can begin the process. You may not be able to finish it, but you can definitely get to a point where as soon as the boards flip that switch, you'll know what the answers are.
So how long, much longer do you think we can keep going on changing? Another year, another
2 years? No. In my view, I think the best thing the boards could do is draw a line in the sand and say, at this point in time, okay, we're going to expect that these changes or amendments would be applicable to the 1/1/18 effective date. All discussions of TRGs, and I would not close down the TRGs, okay? I would let them continue to exist. However, what I would do is allow the TRGs to forward issues to their respective boards and or interpretive bodies, and let those issues bubble up and be handled that way.
With changes, possibly.
Possibly, but they would be pushed out much further, as they would if those issues bubbled up in 2020 or 2025. But I would draw a line in the sand in order to accomplish what I think you're aiming at, Ian, which is a steady or stable platform.
So would you leave the TRG running till 2020, 2025?
No, I would more or less let it run right up to the effective date, and after that, I would say let the interpretive bodies deal with the issues.
There still could be a good reason for keeping them going after implementation.
There could be, but I think the interpretive bodies could handle the body of questions that probably will emerge by then.
So why couldn't they do that now?
They could, and that's what I'm recommending, okay? But the TRGs, because they, I think, are equipped to gather and collect these questions in a more facile way than the interpretive bodies.
The staff collect these questions, not the TRG.
Well, the staff, but essentially they're funneled in through the TRG.
The staff.
But we wouldn't necessarily have to deal with them with the same sense of urgency. That's what I where I'm completely in agreement with you. I don't think we need to, you know, after a certain date, call it the end of this year, continue to amend the standard before the 1-1 effective date.
I thought a lot about this when I was reading these papers, just trying to get the balance. It's very difficult with the converged standard and then with diverge deliberations on the converged standard. And certainly it made me hesitate when I looked at some of the responses from the Big Four and some of the big firms who preparers who would like us to be in the same place. But I wondered, and I'm trying not to sort of be pig-headed, you know, I've said this in the past, therefore I have to stick by this decision, and, you know, the ISB has to be completely independent and sort of do their own thing, trying not to be pig-headed in that way. But the thing that made me pause when I was looking at the responses was that we already went through a lot, for me, a lot of the tough decisions when we did the discussions, often with the FASB at the table, when we said, no, our standard is going to be a high hurdle, only where we really think we need clarification will we make change, otherwise we're going to try and stick with our words. And I feel that given that we went through that process and got comments from people, and I think in most cases a majority of our respondents agreed with our approach, I find it hard to do a U-turn now as a board member and say, well, that's what I said to you, wasn't that a good idea, you agree with me, but actually no, I've changed my mind. And that's where I struggle.
And I agree with you, it's just that we've crossed that bridge.
Well, I think we crossed a different bridge, which was to say our strategy is high hurdle, yeah. And I think it's hard for us to go back over that bridge.
And I think the staff have approached it really along the lines that Sue said, that we thought that the ISB very carefully considered the approach to this. We consulted with ASAF, with the Advisory Council, before we issued the exposure draft. And so we reached a very considered decision in the exposure draft. We weren't just floating possible alternatives to what the FASB had done. And therefore, we've approached it thinking about, are we hearing something in the feedback that really challenges that conclusion about the need for a clarification versus maybe a desire to make some improvement?
I think you are, though. That's my point. I think you're hearing a very loud and clear signal from very influential respondents.
We have heard from some respondents saying that they would like us to put convergence at a slightly higher play in the mix of our decision making.
But they're just not some. This is my point. When we say a majority of respondents said this, a majority said that, some said this, few said that, we're counting comment letters. I think you have to look at the source of these comment letters.
I agree, Pat, but I wouldn't say that all of the big accounting firms are saying exactly the same thing in their letters as well. There are differences of views in those letters. They're not uniformly saying exactly the same thing.
I guess the way I saw them was that they were all very, very much in favor of, with a minor exception, of coming to the same.
Yeah, is that surprising?
No, because it reduces costs, okay? It reduces the potential for different interpretations. Enhances comparability.
There you go.
Now, Pat, I understand your emotion, but
how about my thinking?
There's
such a joint effort. Now, your dream can be realized under the conditions both sides work, you know, cooperatively. But I don't think this is the scenario. You know, if let's assume, you know, FSB proposed 10 big changes, we propose 2 big changes. The outcome could be ideal, you know, 4 of them FSB close to us, and another 4 we close to them. That would be workable, but this is not the case, you know. I don't want to debate with you. This is not the case. And back to your exception, you say that others we should converge, except sales tax. But if I said, you know, I won't convert at all, except licensing. And maybe Taka said, I won't convert words, except, you know, performance obligation. How can we achieve?
Well, you let the votes fall where they fall, Wagwo, in that sense. But what I'm saying is where this board, I think, can see a way through or clear to the FASB's decisions and would have otherwise accepted them prior to May of 14, then my mind is let's go ahead with that. If in fact we find something anathema that this is ridiculous, we're not changing that. That's a different story, and I'm on the same page with you.
Doc,
thank you. I agree with the staff's articulation about high hurdle, but maybe we could add a little more. When we discuss high hurdle and discussion about convergence, we could judge whether or not we should converge based on the criteria, whether the issue is internationally common or it's US specific. So actually in the process of TLG, there are many members from United States, and the US GAAP already has lots of rules, and also SEC has their own guidelines, and they have their own tax rules. So discussion tend to talk about US specific issues. Maybe typical example is sales tax issue. So I, in a sense, I have sympathy. They already have some discretion, and the situation hasn't changed, so they want to keep it. But it's a US specific issue. It would not be the case for other countries. ISB is dealing with 130 countries, so they may have completely different sales tax type levies. So then in that case, such kind of accounting policy choice wouldn't work. So in that case, we cannot converge. So therefore, the question is, hurdle is high or not, but rather, the issue we are talking about is internationally common or just US specific issue.
Yeah. But what about if we don't like their answer?
Sorry?
What about if we don't like FASB's answer? It's an international issue.
In that case, we have to think about it seriously. Even though we didn't like the answer, our question is whether the proposal is logical and whether the question is a real improvement or not. So in that case, if it is real improvement, we may be able to change if it's really improved.
All questions are international.
I wouldn't think so. Some are heavily influenced by the US legacy rules. So I think we can segregate that. Yeah, because every jurisdiction has every situation. Say there might be China specific issue, there might be Australia specific issue. That must be dealt with in their jurisdiction. But fortunately, US has a privilege to make a converged international standard. That's why they can discuss the issue as if it were internationally common issue. But if you look at carefully, some of the issues which we talked about in the TLG is purely US specific issue. So we can segregate in that way. So that's my takeaway.
Well,
I have sympathy for what Patrick is saying. To the extent we could be converged, would be better than not being converged. But I'm just concerned about the time implications. If we are to wait still more 6 months more to close the collection of things and to decide on whether or not an amendment is needed, then we start re-exposing something from that point in time, 6 months' time. So we are just 1 more year to the whole process of finalizing IFRS 15. So I think we can say goodbye to the effective date of 1/1/18. It doesn't no longer work.
We could very well decide to only consider the issues on the table now and not
That would be an alternative, but what would be the basis for saying only those matters? Because tomorrow there can be some new ones. Why make two different decisions? So I think we have to make a decision now. Maybe on some of the topics, if we are sure that the outcome that is expected is the same, maybe there is an opportunity to choose the same words, because I see no reasons to have different words if we know we normally have the same outcome. So there is maybe some possibility here, but there are some areas where we don't know at this stage whether it's the same outcome. Then if we don't want to re-expose again something, because I think we cannot go to a conclusion that would be a U-turn from where we are without re-exposing, right? And I think
I think the issue is we have a couple of decisions ahead of us where we both boards feel the outcome may be the same, although the language is rather different. I think our main concern is that if we make the more pervasive changes that the FESB is proposing, that we will be facing unintended consequences. That is the main concern that we have.
And that would require some exposure.
That's the major concern.
Exposure. There are possibly a few small areas where we could do something without re-exposing and without taking any risk, but very few, I think.
Overall, support the approach taken by the staff, and I want to make a distinction between what you do in 7A, which is you said, okay, let's stand back and see what feedback we had about our overall strategy in different hurdles. And I think overall we got that strategy confirmed. And I think the staff then goes on in each paper subject to say, okay, in the context of that strategy, in each case we did a compare and contrast with what FASB was doing and got feedback specifically on each issue about whether, in light of people's view about the overall strategy, they think we made the right choice. And so I think, so I support what the staff has said here, that we've got a reaffirmation of our strategy, no U-turns on strategy. I think that does not stop us from looking in each paper about whether people think we should reconsider. And then I think to Philippe's point about re-exposure, yes or no, if we want to make some changes, I think the preparation that the staff showed in terms of this exposure draft, I think, got us feedback on what the FASB also was considering, at least in their proposals, maybe not in their redeliberations. So I think that's the alternative we can look for. I think, I know, having gone through these, that there's one that I, want to reweigh the evidence on that one. But I'd like to distinguish between the strategy for which we got affirmation in that 7A versus the individual issues.
Yeah, and you can see in one of the papers whereby you can see that it really called us to think very carefully about whether or not to affirm that proposal. In the next paper we're going to talk about it.
So I wanted to make that distinction if it doesn't take...
When we made the decisions, we were fully aware of what the FESB was doing. Mm-hmm. And we weighed all that and then we still decided, even though the outcome will be probably the same, we'll do it slightly different. Now, I think if the whole world had told us, perhaps that was a lofty goal, but now looking at the words that the FESB arrived at, why don't you do the same? If the whole world had told us to do that, I think, that would be a clear signal, but that's not what we hear. We hear from accounting firms, at least the majority of the accounting firms, but we don't hear it from the other constituents, right?
And I just wanted to make the point that having had a decision in 7A, that reaffirms our strategy, we still are considering in each paper whether for that decision we have as opposed to
absolutely.
7A taking all that compare and contrast off the table.
Exactly.
Okay, so with that in mind, let's go to the paper.
Okay, so we'll go to 7B. I should welcome Amy to the board table, although Amy has actually worked quite extensively on the exposure draft. Actually, she came in after the board discussion, so this is Amy's first visit to the board table.
Okay.
So, nice to Amy.
Take it out on you guys.
Yeah.
All right, so as introduced, the next paper for discussion will be paper 7B, which analyzes the responses to question 1 in the ISB exposure draft. The paper discusses the proposed amendments relating to the identification of performance obligations, in particular, application of the concept of distinct and the separately identifiable principle. It also discusses amendments proposed by the FASB relating to promised goods or services that are immaterial in the context of the contract and an accounting policy election relating to shipping and handling activities that were not proposed by the ISB. We will introduce each of the three topics with questions for the board individually. With the first topic, starting on paragraph 6 of the paper, relating to the proposed amendments for identifying performance obligations. So concerns were raised at the TRG about potential diversity in stakeholders' understanding of the separately identifiable principle and the supporting factors in paragraph 29. In particular, that there was a risk of paragraph 29C being applied more broadly than intended, resulting in items being inappropriately combined as a single performance obligation. In response to these concerns, the ISB decided that given the nature of the issues raised, amendments to the standard itself were not necessary, and clarifications could effectively be made through the illustrative examples. The concept of distinct within the context of the contract is new, and therefore, as with any new requirement, it is to be expected that questions will arise as practice develops. Accordingly, the exposure draft proposed 4 new examples and amendments to some of the existing examples in order to illustrate the application of the requirements in the standard. The basis for conclusions in the exposure draft also provided some additional color around the board's intentions and the separately identifiable principle. As summarized in the paper, 63 respondents included comments with respect to this topic. Almost all of them agreed that clarifications were needed, and a majority of respondents agreed with the ISB's proposed approach. However, many of these respondents expressed concerns about some of the amendments or suggested additional revisions to the illustrative examples or additional illustrative examples. In particular, respondents raised concerns about the understandability of example 10 case B and a risk that that example may be applied too broadly, resulting in unintended consequences. Quite a few respondents have encouraged the ISB to adopt the FASB's amendments to paragraph 29. They indicated that the proposed amendments to the examples are not sufficient, and amending paragraph 29 would provide necessary clarity and make the standard more operational. Many of these respondents also expressed concerns about divergence in practice between IFRS and US GAAP. And in October, the FASB reaffirmed its proposed amendments to topic 606. Taking into consider this feedback, we've identified 2 possible approaches for finalizing the proposals, which are outlined in paragraphs 23 to 44 of the paper. The first option presented is to amend paragraph 29 of IFRS 15 and the accompanying illustrative examples to align with the FASB's wording. We acknowledge that because step 2 is a fundamental part of the model, that there perhaps is more cause for convergence on this topic than in other areas for which the board's decisions and proposed amendments are not aligned. However, if the ISB were to converge, we believe that in order to avoid confusion, the FASB's proposed amendments should be taken as a package as a whole, which would result in more extensive revisions to the proposed illustrative examples compared to what was included in the exposure draft. The second option presented is to reaffirm the decision not to amend the standard, but to revise the illustrative examples based on feedback received. In particular, clarifying revisions would be made to example 10 case B and the accompanying basis for conclusions. We think on balance that the ISB's rationale for the decision taken remains relevant, and we therefore recommend option 2. A majority of respondents supported this approach and were not convinced that the proposed amendments are essential to clarifying the board's intentions. At this point, we'd like to open it up to the board to ask whether you agree with the staff recommendations.
We go.
No, I fully support the staff proposal. Particularly, I think paragraph 44 I like the most. That is whether we need to provide more illustrative examples. Of course, provide more illustrative examples will, you know, help people to understand principles. And this is the positive side. But I fully agree with staff, the two, you know, the conclusions. That is a negative side. You know, the inclusion of additional new example may create a risk of unintended consequence. Firstly, may lead to tension or raise additional questions in relation to how the principles in standards could be applied to individual facts and circumstances. And secondly, I like also very much the illustrative example that accompany standards are not intended to provide industry and sect-specific guidance or to prevent only manner in which the requirement could be applied. You know, not only in these papers, you know, I agree with totally with staff proposals on this point, also in other papers. Very much.
Zhang Wu.
Thank you. May I comment on paragraph 39 and 40? The reason we are not following FASB's expression of interdependence is in 39, based on your analysis, we should still consider the whole picture regardless of the interdependence, one dependence. That is just one, some kind of a, one of many factors. Another thing is in paragraph 40, our examples are showing some kind of interdependency might be a good idea to satisfy the requirement of paragraph 29C. However, examples are just examples. So we'll better focus on the paragraph in the body. So that means only justification not to be conversed with the FASB's is in paragraph 39. So based on their analysis of 39, paragraph 39, I'm still not be convinced of the not being conversed with the FASB's. We improve the expression of clearly saying interdependent, interrelated. So what, how do you think about the idea?
I think what we're explaining in that part of the paper, Chung Wu, is to say that the questions around what does 29C mean and dependency, we dealt with by using illustrations and further clarification, if you like, explanatory, what does the whole of paragraph 29 mean and the basis for conclusion. The FASB has directly dealt with the issue by effectively amending the words to more strongly convey that notion in paragraph 29 itself. Mm-hmm. And that was a different approach about how we address this part of the standard.
Amar.
Excellent. I do agree with staff's approach. My general perception is that the standard would work anyway, with or without the clarifications that we provided. I particularly have myself a very high hurdle of changing the standard before the application, the effective date. And I agreed with the clarifications under the grounds that those would be only clarifications that wouldn't change any the outcome of the application of the standard itself. That said, I think what we are doing is more than enough to help people apply the standard as we intended. I wouldn't go much further than what we are doing here. I would even caution us not to add more examples, because we already have a huge or a significant number of examples. And those will not be enough. there will always be someone with a specific situation that would like us to have an example. So I do agree, and let's stick to the examples we have already.
Mary?
This is the issue for me where I have some hesitation about the staff recommendation because I think the feedback in the context of people who said overall you have the right strategy, got some feedback that, okay, we understand what the standard is trying to accomplish, but we find it much clearer, much more useful to have the rewritten section in terms of improving the standard for the duration. I'm not dead set on we must do this. The staff has absolutely the wrong recommendation, but this is the one where I think I would like to encourage the staff to see if our staff and the FASB staff could come up with agreed proposal on this language based more on what the FASB exposed, and I put it that way because I know they're ahead of us in redeliberations in the same way that on this issue, and the same way that our staff has identified in this paper a few places where you'd like to do some clarifications, minor amendments to our wording and example. I would imagine that the same thing came out of the FASB recommendations. In the end, I think our stakeholders applying IFRS 15 have the minimum support that they need, but I heard a lot of strong messages about this issue, partly because of the centrality of this issue, and partly because of the way that, hindsight is always better. You look back and say, did we really need to write it and all the negatives in here, and it can be very hard to explain to people applying it. So,
but I think the real the realistic choice here would be to either accept the FSB wording or not.
Yeah, I mean,
to hammer out a new compromise.
I think
I wasn't trying to say go off and renegotiate something that's halfway in between.
Yeah.
I'm just assuming that the same way that our staff said in here, based on our proposals, let's go ahead with our proposals with a few cleanup, etc. I don't know. I think we have the ability to consider what FASB exposed and what we exposed. And I'm assuming that when FASB redeliberated, they probably said something similar about what they exposed. Yes, what we exposed, but with a little cleanup here or there. And I'm just trying to allow for that in terms of does our staff, if they went back to FASB and said, okay, if we're going to pick up basically your package, tell us what more you're thinking about doing to it that isn't public record. Let's see if between us we can agree something that we think works based on that. And if so, then that's the one I'd like to reconsider. I'm not going to make the same comment on every one of the papers in the 7 series. This is the one that I thought
was. Well, this was also the one where the staff clearly hesitated most.
Yeah.
Doc.
Thank you. I agree with all of the staff recommendations which made in this month's board table, except this one. So basically, I agree with the high hurdle, and also there are some companies who have already.
I don't think you're speaking the truth, because you just disagreed on another issue with the staff, which was your right, but on the IFRIC question, you.
No, in the seventh series.
I'm sorry, we are talking about revenue. So
I thought you had already used up your quotum for disagreement.
Thank you. So I agree with all of the staff's recommendation in terms of revenue, except this one. And I do agree with the high hurdle. And we should take care of our constituents who might have adopted IFRS 15 and who might have started preparation. So, and also we should be very careful about unintended consequences. However, in this particular case, I think the FASB's wording would be better for the normal person to understand, because the FASB drafting provides the objective first, and also FASB has addressed with what the Changgu pointed out, and it is consistent with the example. And our wording was okay maybe a year ago, but after we having re-deliberation and providing some other example, maybe wording is not very much straightforward in terms of interaction between example. So if that is the case, then I would be happy to change our wording to FASB's wording.
Sue? Like some others, although I have a general strategy of a high hurdle here, this was the issue where I had the greatest sympathy, both because of the discussion about the sort of one-way versus two-way debate, the dependency or interdependency, but also because it's so central to the model. Having said that, the only thing that then made me sort of hesitate a little bit, being too excited to therefore move to the FASB approach, is firstly the number of examples that come with it, which always seem to be what cause us trouble down the track. But also I'm not sure whether... it says here that although some support was expressed for the FASB's proposals, a majority of respondents agreed with our proposed approach. And given what we exposed for comment and got specific comments back from on our stakeholders, do we have enough, if we were to change tack and say, okay, because it's so important to be converged, on this particular central point, we should go with the more along with the FASB, to somebody who doesn't agree with 28 and the 9 interaction, please. If we could, do we have enough comfort or knowledge to know whether the people who agreed with our words would be comfortable that there weren't going to be problems with the FASB words because we didn't actually get them to comment on that? That's what makes me hesitate a bit.
I mean, my colleagues will disagree with this.
It just feels like we've got a higher risk of unintended consequences.
I think a lot of people's responses are very much along the lines of saying you don't need to make this change, rather than we recommend you don't incorporate the FASB's words because these are the consequences. We noted in the paper that effectively what the FASB proposal did is to elevate one of the indicators into the principle, which, as some of you have noted and some of our stakeholders noted, it does make a, perhaps gives a clearer sense of what it's about. And I thought there could be some unintended consequences of that. We've looked at the FASB's feedback in their letters, and nobody identified anything in their feedback to suggest that there's a potential risk of doing that. So I think that perhaps takes some of the risk away that you identified. So you also mentioned another point about the examples. I mean, I think what we're trying to convey in this paper is that we couldn't really adopt paragraph 29 as FASB proposed and then effectively really go and do our own thing on the examples. I mean, I think that would just be very confusing. However, we perhaps don't necessarily need to take all of the additional examples that the FASB proposed. So we added some new examples to illustrate some very specific things. So those examples were converged as far as possible in terms of what they were seeking to achieve, and obviously had some differences in wording because obviously we had a different principle. The objective was the same, but the wording wasn't quite the same. So we can not necessarily add any more examples, but we can effectively try to bring our examples more into line with the FASB's wording, given the fact if we go down this route, we would have the same wording.
Yeah. Henry, I actually agree with Taka and Mary, and I love agreeing with Taka, and always hurts to agree with Mary, just, can never agree with the national office type, but the easily quickly. But here's my thinking, and it is there was three central issues put in front of the TRG. This was one of them, plus licensing and then agent principal. And it's also directly in step two of the model. It just strikes me is that examples don't quite do it. If you think, if it's the general consensus is this question needs work, examples are not the same as in the standard. I mean, I could certainly come around with Amara. I'm not sure we need to do anything in 15. I could have, lived with it as it was written, but that ship sailed. We created the TRG. We put 50 questions through, but this is one of the three. And as I read paragraph 28, says nearly all the FASB's respondents agree the proposed amendments improve operability and better articulate the separation principle. That seems pretty important to me. And I agree, we probably don't need all their examples, you know, perhaps because examples are supposed to be illustrations of your thought process as opposed to guidance on their own standalone basis. So I think I'm where Taka is and Mary is. We perhaps need to rethink this one a little bit further. We adopt their package or something in between. Because I suspect the majority of our respondents agree, probably we don't know if it's because they the high hurdle, the stable platform, or because they just thought we had a better answer. I didn't see that provided in the paper, but that's right.
Can I ask one question? Would we, if we file the staff's recommendation and the FASB concludes based on the way you described here, would we state that we would anticipate that our guidance would produce substantially the same outcomes formally in the basis for conclusions anywhere?
If you did that way, you could just as well adopt their word.
Exactly. So that's my question.
Well, I think one of the things we've heard from the feedback is we have to be very careful in that type of situation where you've got different words about exactly what we do say, about expecting the outcomes to be the same. I think it's just quite dangerous, and some people have cautioned us to say, if you have different words, clearly there are going to be situations where the outcomes are different. I do believe, though, that the boards had a similar objective of what they were trying to clarify, and I also do think that although I agree that step two of the model, identifying performance obligations, is absolutely central, at the end of the day, it is a very judgmental part of the model as well, and therefore...
And the very reason why we didn't want to...
And that's the reason why...
Initially, did not want this more wholesale approach, is that we were worried about unintended consequences, so we could not possibly say that it would have the same outcome.
I just think if in fact, then it is a possibility that you could have different outcomes, it's almost incumbent upon us now to discuss or describe how that might emerge with the differences in the words, not the differences, you know, necessarily beforehand.
Why is it incumbent on us? I don't know.
Because we're essentially taking a stand saying we don't think it's necessary to change the words. They're taking a stand, it is necessary to change the words. So we must have in our mind a scenario where certain outcomes would be permitted or precluded under their words.
I think we were trying to effectively answer quite specific concern, and we decided that that could be done with an illustrative example to say these words are not meant to be read to get this particular outcome. And the FASB decided, totally understand, effectively that it would be a more effective amendment would be to essentially clarify the principle. And so that's what they did. So, you know, I hear the feedback this afternoon that says that convergence on this one might be definitely one to consider and put higher in the decision making, because we have got the same objective here about what we're trying to achieve.
Stephen. I mean, on balance, I support the staff recommendation. It was a difficult one for me as well. But my question is, I don't understand why it could give a different outcome. It just seems, I agree that the FASB's wording is a better articulation. It's a more elegant way of putting it. But I don't see why it changes anything.
I think all I'm saying, Steve, is that for us to say the outcomes will definitely be the same.
No, I'm not suggesting that
I just think it's very, it's just when the words are different, we can't possibly think of every possible scenario. And the way, you know, as one comment letter put it, the way that these words have been subject to an absolute forensic scrutiny, it's almost like naive to us to think that there could be.
But then you said yourself that this whole area is subject to judgment anyway.
It is, I agree, yeah. So I don't see that there should be differences, but I would be uncomfortable.
The biggest lesson I learned out of the TRG was this forensic examination. I mean, people don't take the whole thing in context. Yeah. They burrow down to specific words.
And these things that were
different words, you could just come up with different answers.
I mean, and these aren't, we're not talking about criteria in this paragraph. We're talking about factors to consider. They are indicators to consider as well.
If you
think that their solution is better worded and more elegant. And we have not heard from the FASB feedback that there seem to be serious unintended consequences.
Well, I just think then we're kind of pushing ourselves into accepting other stuff down the road. If it's well, if it's a better wording, more elegant articulation, if that's the reason for the change, why wouldn't we then take others?
Well, this is one of the fundamental points. I mean, the fact we would do it on a one fundamental issue doesn't imply we have to do every tiny thing down the road. I mean, we have to make a selection of the most important words.
We have decided to also make some changes. Not a big, but we perceived the need for clarification. So if we feel that, and also a lot of constituents feel that the solution is more elegant or better phrased.
I'm not sure a lot of constituents look at
that. Yeah.
It's not perceived.
And it's just balancing out the effectively an improvement versus what necessary clarification is required for practice to be able to implement the standard. So, and I think you have to balance that, but I hear the comments about that this could be an area where we could maintain convergence.
I think I'm probably in the same place Steve was. I found this a very difficult one to get to on balance when put the staff view. And in part that was because I wondered, I agree with what everybody said about our words as they written providing the answer that is comfortable. People might have to work a little bit harder to get to the answer, but the answer is right. They will get to the right answer. My little bit of a concern now is as soon as we start playing with new words, we have a potential for unintended consequences.
Yep.
And those unintended consequences, as we've seen with all the words we're discussing here, don't necessarily always come through in the first exposure draft we've been through. So maybe just for my understanding, those of our constituents who commented on the FASB wording, did they actually get into the detail of the FASB wording, or was the impression that they kind of looked at it and then thought, well, they'll stick with what we've got? Have we, in other words, had detailed, proper forensic, to use the other word, feedback on the wording that was proposed under the on FASB wording?
I mean, I think that the big firms would have obviously considered it very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
So those who've encouraged us to adopt those words would be comfortable that there wouldn't be unintended consequences from that wording. But you're right, there is.
And
that was one of the reasons why we didn't propose changing a principle that had already raised some questions, because there was the risk of new words cause yet further questions.
And the remainder of our constituents who responded sort of remain silent on this issue. So you say the big four obviously looked at it in a lot of detail.
Yeah, I mean, aside from the big four, there were a few other stakeholders that replied and did support the FASB wording. I think to Henry's point he made earlier, we didn't receive any comments that had concerns with the FASB wording, and neither did the FASB. So there wasn't any direct feedback saying that there was anything that had been identified with what they had proposed that was creating an issue for people. The respondents who didn't necessarily say that they encouraged the FASB wording to be used, I think it's hard to make an assessment as to how many of them had read both proposals and whether they had just read the exposure draft and commented on it on that basis. So to a certain extent just stayed silent on the comparison.
And it's very clear that some respondents are saying, perhaps you see it perhaps more on the licenses, is that ultimately they do weigh the words being the same as being higher than what they might say would be their preferred set of words. So they might say, I would prefer these words rather than those words, but ultimately it's almost like what is more important, that the words are the same. That's my first preference.
Majority of our respondents didn't say that on this issue, did they?
Not the majority, no.
Mm-hmm.
Mary?
Just checking something. I'm assuming that the responses that we received in respect of our ED were and the usual suspects in terms of being IFRS stakeholders. We didn't have, in this case, any of our information or feedback being skewed by people who, let's say, because of participating in the TRG, are what you would consider FASB stakeholders who are writing to us to encourage us to move to that way. That the feedback we're talking about here is feedback from IFRS stakeholders.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think maybe one area where there's a little bit more of a slight tendency towards the FASB population would be on something like shipping and handling, but not on this specific.
No, and I'm literally talking about who it is who was coming back to us. These are people we'd expect, I mean, not every company every time, but these are people who are looking at applying the IFRS standard in the IFRS world.
Would you call the big four our constituents?
Yeah, in this case, because I think, first of all, they wrote, my sense is they wrote separately to each of the boards because of the different timing of the exposure drafts. And so I think, you know, when they're writing here, they were writing about our proposals. It wasn't somebody saying, hey, by the way, wouldn't it be good if we, you know, we know we're going to have to apply ASU at 606, but, you know, we'd really like this to be aligned, so let's write to the ISB as well. It wasn't any of that. I didn't think it was, but I just wanted to stop and ask that question. So it's all feedback on our standard by people who are expecting to apply our standard.
Did anybody write to FASB saying, why don't you change to the ISB?
I think, if I remember rightly, that on this particular issue, in their feedback, there was one, they had one comment letter from somebody who really wasn't a direct stakeholder user of US GAAP, who was just stressing convergence. They also wrote to us stressing convergence.
We'll have to just make a decision. I could either go either way and feel comfortable.
The question is, would anybody object to adopting the FASB?
So I could indeed ask a question. Who would not object to... Who would not object to following the FASB approach?
Who would want to adopt the
FASB solution?
Yeah, Gary, you're in.
I know, I'm in.
I'd like you to try. I mean, if this is the only issue that you have to bring back in January to see whether or not you think it's possible based on where the FASB has got to.
Well, of course we can try. We can just adopt their words. That's what I was asking.
Well, I don't know if their words have moved on at all because of their redeliberations.
Let me just the FASB has, they obviously deliberated this in early October, and their drafting has proceeded, and they've actually done an external review draft of it, and the latest version I've seen of these words is effectively there is some additional words added into the last indicator, but those words I think are very similar to some words that were already in an illustrative example in the latest version. So I mean, I think if we go for this, we're going for their words, and obviously we the staff, and we, you know, we're always talking to each other, staff. It just means that effectively how we've been commenting on their proposal previously changes a little bit because you have now much more of a direct interest in those words, and we will do our best to effectively make sure that you're comfortable with those words as well, and if you have any comments on that, we get it to the FSB.
It would be good if we go down that path to get an idea of what the examples might look like as well, and whether you actually think that we need additional examples, because I think you suggested we wouldn't necessarily.
I don't think, because effectively we both had very targeted specific issues we wanted to try and illustrate, and in particular it was that example 10B, which had the multiple units being a single performance obligation, because we both had that example, and I think both boards have to try and constrain that example a little bit more, because it's just people are worried that the example might be read much more broadly than the board's intended, and Amy highlighted in the paper various things that we can do. And so I think if we have the same paragraph 29, it would be good really to have exactly the same words. And the, if I remember rightly, the FASB latest draft had picked up some of the nuances we brought into the example, just having had more time to draft it than their exposure, and we can continue to work together.
Okay.
Yep.
So let's go for it. Well, given the fact that all the board members that said that they would only be naughty on this issue, we don't need to discuss the others.
Yeah, I can see it names.
So shall we move to
topic two.
Mm-hmm.
The second topic for discussion, starting at paragraph 50 in the paper, relates to an amendment the ISB decided not to propose. In response to concerns that the new standard might require an entity to identify significantly more performance obligations than under previous revenue standards, the FASB decided to propose an amendment that permits an entity not to identify goods or services promised to the customer that are immaterial in the context of the contract. Majority of the respondents that commented on this topic agreed with the ISB's decision. They indicated that the application of materiality is required for all financial information, and specific requirements regarding materiality are not necessary for the purposes of IFRS 15. A few respondents did disagree, indicating that the board's intention not to require an entity to individually identify every possible promised good or service should be made clear in the standard itself. They observed that such an amendment would reduce the burden on preparers and auditors in terms of documenting and auditing compliance with the standard, and without explicit guidance, it would be difficult for entities to justify that they're not required to identify immaterial promised goods or services. Key respondents also raised some concerns about convergence. We do not believe that the risk that would arise from setting a precedent of providing standard-specific guidance in relation to the application of materiality concepts outweighs any cost benefits that might be provided. Also, given that the majority of responses were supportive of the ISB's decision and compelling new arguments have not been identified, we recommend that the ISB affirms its decision not to amend IFRS 15 in this topic. With that, we'd open up to the board to see if you agree with the staff recommendations.
I agree with the staff recommendation. I was just going to say that all members of the board who championed the small ticket item in the Lease Accounting Project should be voting here for the FASB approach or against the ISB approach, because I view it essentially as the same issue. But I was against the small ticket exemption in the lease standard, and I am in agreement with the staff with respect to this. I don't think materiality should be applied here at a contract level.
See, but what's happened, that is, you've convinced me since the leasing standard.
Did you want to speak?
No, not at all. Henry,
I think there's a difference in the timing of when the ISB has decided to make that amendment in the context of the leasing standard. I think that is slightly different.
do you agree they're the same principle, though?
I think that
application is the same.
Yeah.
I think there are slight difference between lease and this sales, because
does it make any difference to your decision? I mean, we can have this debate.
Yeah, I don't change my vote, but just in response to the partner's comment, it's not quite the same as the lease issue. This issue is not really widespread, and the lease issue is whether or not we should recognize on balance or not, and then it affects the total number is very important. But in the case of sales, we cannot neglect the smaller one because this is the real transaction. So therefore, the issue is slightly different, and I think this issue, which FASB raised, is kind of US-specific issue, because the decision first made is heavily influenced by the SEC's literature, which is prefunctory, and consequential. Anyway, yeah. so inconsequential. So therefore, because there was such a literature, they do care about it. So it's a U.S. specific issue. So I do agree with staff's recommendation.
Well, I voted for the small ticket exemption and actually voted for the FASB way of doing things now, probably a year and a half ago, a long time ago. But do we get to the same place? I mean, if they put their words in perfunctory and consequential or whatever the final settling is and we don't, how do we get all the immaterial, the minor performance obligations not to be separate counted? I mean, where in our standards does it get there?
I think the TRG discussion just highlighted that people will naturally get there under IFRS 15, and there's...
But I would hope so. My question was, where do you get there in 15?
Just by general application and materiality and the overall objective of identifying performance obligations. So I think it was, as Pat said, I think...
By using common sense, yeah.
I think the FSB just felt they had to make that amendment almost to, you know, I've heard the chairman say it, to try and get US practice into line with how the rest of the world will apply the standard.
But the argument goes both ways. I don't see where it would hurt for us to put it in either then.
Well, I think, personally, I do see some downside of putting it in, because I think you are, if you were to, you're applying materiality at the contract level, and some of the stakeholders have highlighted that's using materiality in a slightly different way as how it's normally used.
Equality.
Not slightly, a materially different way.
Okay. Do we support staff's recommendation?
That's 12.
It's 12. Oh, okay.
12, in fact. Yeah.
Okay, and the third topic for discussion, starting at paragraph 59 in the paper, is an accounting policy election relating to shipping and handling activities that the ISB decided not to propose. In response to cost-benefit concerns and requests for additional relief, the FASB decided to amend topic 606 to include an accounting policy election that permits entities to account for shipping and handling activities that occur after the customer has obtained control of a good as fulfillment activities, and also to clarify that shipping and handling activities that occur before the customer obtains control are fulfillment activities. The majority of respondents that commented on this topic supported the ISB's decision not to propose an election and agreed with the reasons articulated in the basis for conclusions to the exposure draft. A handful of respondents disagreed with the ISB's decision, raising concerns that the lack of a policy election under IFRS would result in differences between IFRS and US GAAP financial results and would drive unnecessary complexity and cost for IFRS stakeholders with little benefit for users. We do not believe that the responses received have raised compelling new arguments that were not previously taken into consideration by the ISB, and therefore recommend that the board affirms its decision not to amend the standard. However, we agree with the feedback from some respondents that in addition to providing the rationale for the decision, it would be helpful to clarify in the basis for conclusions that shipping and handling activities that occur before the customer obtains control of the related good are fulfillment costs, and that because the policy election is not available under IFRS 15, differences may arise between entities reporting under IFRS and US GAAP.
Agreed? Yeah. We go.
To highlight the difference of the final requirement of illustrated examples, I will agree. But highlight possibly a particular difference will result in the same or different outcome, I will not agree with.
You mean on the basis of conclusion?
No, I do not agree with, because, there are so many differences, some are major or some are minor, some are little bit wordy difference. We use positive, they use negative. And should we highlight every time, whether such a difference will result in different outcome or the same? I don't know. So I will not support any mention, you know, such a difference would result in the same or different outcome.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Yes, I don't think it is. Mm-hmm. It is quite risky, you know, to do so.
But doesn't people tell us that it would be helpful?
I think
where we've consciously made different
right.
decisions to confirm that yes, in fact, that is different.
I mean, I said earlier on about being very careful about general comments about we would expect the outcome to be the same when the words are different, and people very much caution that. But it's very noticeable in the feedback that Raghava touched on earlier on, that a lot of people really said they liked it when we were very clear when we identified specific implications. So for example, on non-cash consideration, where we said, and people really do want this, because if the FASB had proposed a very specific requirement, we said that would be an acceptable reading under RFSG, but there would be other acceptable readings, and people pick on that and say we should try to do that as much as possible. And on this one, actually, some people said we should say it, we should make it very clear that you cannot read across from US GAAP this practical expedient and apply it under RFS 15. So it goes that way too.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we agree with the staff recommendation?
Well,
okay, that brings us to the next paper.
Thank you. Yeah, next paper is paper 7C, dealing with licenses. And as highlighted in paragraph 3 of that paper, in the ISV's exposure draft, there were proposed amendments to clarify two areas. First of all, identifying the nature of an entity's promise in granting a license, which is important in determining whether the revenue for that license is recognised at a point in time or over time. And the second issue was dealing with the scope and applicability of the royalties constraint, which is an exception to the general requirements for the variable consideration. The ISB's proposals for the royalties constraint were consistent with those in the FASB's proposed ASU. And in October, the FASB did decide to finalise its proposals in this area. Based on the feedback from IFRS stakeholders, the staff are making a recommendation, which we'll come back to also finalise proposals in this area, which should maintain convergence. However, in October, the FASB also affirmed its decision to change the existing application guidance relating to the nature of the promise in a license, and also to add some guidance on when to make that determination. In addition, the FASB also proposed to add some additional guidance and examples on the possible effects of contractual restrictions in a license. Those contractual restrictions, the FASB are doing some additional work on that area, which again we'll come back to during the course of the paper. In looking at the feedback from IFRS stakeholders on the nature of the promise, determining the nature of a promise, generally the feedback supports the board's proposals in this area, subject to some suggestions for drafting improvements and some clarifications to the explanatory materials. And therefore, based on that feedback, we are recommending in paragraph 7, where all the recommendations are summarised, that the board again affirms its earlier decisions to clarify requirements on determining the nature of the licence rather than changing the approach to that particular issue. We'd also like to draw your attention in this paper, it's highlighted in paragraph 8, we do have an additional recommendation which doesn't relate directly to proposals in the exposure draft, but it does relate to issues that have arisen subsequent to the publication of the exposure draft and the FASB's proposals. These are issues that do touch on the contractual restrictions that were highlighted in the FASB's proposed ASU, and so we would like to spend a little bit of time in this paper looking at those issues, but our recommendation is not to make any amendments to IFRS 15 at this time for those particular issues. In the interest of time, I'm not proposing to spend a lot of time in each of the different areas, but I do suggest that we break up this paper into three distinct areas. First of all, the nature of the entity's promise and when to determine the nature of that promise, which is covered in paragraphs 10 to 35 and 72 to 76. Then we'll come back and look at the royalties constraint in paragraphs 36 to 63, and then deal with the contractual restrictions issues in paragraphs 64 to 71, and the TRG-related issues in paragraphs 80 to 95, if that's okay with people. I'll remind you of where to find things as we go through each area. So the first area is the nature of the entity's promise and when to determine it. As I mentioned, the IASB made proposals in the exposure draft to clarify the existing requirements, whereas the FASB proposed to introduce a different approach, which would classify licenses for intellectual property as either functional or symbolic, whereas functional licenses would typically be recognised at a point in time, although there are some exceptions to that if there are subsequent activities from the licensor that would change the functionality of the licence. And symbolic licences or licences for symbolic intellectual property, the revenue for those would be recognised over time. In a lot of cases, the two approaches are likely to result in the same outcome, but we have identified some specific examples that were brought through in some of the responses that did indicate there would be differences in outcome in some circumstances. With that, though, I just open to the floor and ask if any board members have got any comments before we go to the recommendation.
Can you elaborate on those instances that you were just referring to where you would expect to arrive at different outcomes?
The expected outcome, I'll try and put my finger on the specific example, but one of them is things like licenses for movies or licenses for music from artists that are no longer with us, where there clearly is going to be no subsequent activity to support the brand or support the name, etc., because it just kind of stands on its own. And it's maybe worth highlighting in those cases, some of the respondents did ask that if the ISB did decide to go with the FASB's proposals, that would do an exception that would allow those types of licenses, the revenue to be recognised at a point in time. And that did mirror some of the requests to the FASB for their proposals, which said, in circumstances, can we have an exception so that we can recognise the revenue at a point in time in these circumstances? But in for symbolic, yeah. But at the FASB in its October meeting decided not to go with that exception and to affirm its original decision.
Philippe? This is one of the areas where I would put a very high hurdle in changing our fundamental wording of the description of licenses. Because this is one area where some preparers, maybe not all, have already analyzed the contracts, reached conclusions, and are ready to go. And if you want to meet some of them, I can introduce you and organize a meeting. And changing words to describe licenses today would mean, according to them, to redo all the work, to re-examine all contracts with a new light of the new words. And at this stage, I think it will be extremely costly for them. On the other side, I don't see the benefits, except that maybe convergence is good, but it seems that our constituents prefer our wording as compared to
with
the wording.
With different outcomes?
Even with different outcomes, yes. Yes. Just want to be clear about this, whether we think there might be different outcomes or not. But it seems to me that the overall, our constituents prefer the wording we use to the other one, because they have some of them are quite well advanced in doing the work, to have to redo again, I think I would not consider that being very wise. I don't disagree that convergence is always good, but in this case, I think the hurdle in contrast to the previous discussion where we said we don't expect a big change, but we think the new wording is better. So we did our decisions on that basis here. There is no evidence that the wording by FSB is better than ours. Certainly there is even opposite evidence in the constitution, on the consultation, and yes, maybe different outcomes, yeah, possibly.
Mary?
I support the staff recommendation in this area not to make changes. I just wanted to flag up two wording slash presentation points that I think would be helpful in finalizing. In paragraph 25, you note that some suggested this is that an example that we included in the basis for the exposure guidance, so it's, you know, just from the exposure graph, get moved into the paragraph that we are proposing to add as B59A. And I think that that actually would be helpful in terms of putting it front and center in the standard. It is not defining standalone functionality, but I think it's bringing it to life a bit more. I can see where it can fit in. I mean, I'll talk afterwards to this as an aside rather than a rewrite of the paragraph. So it's what we exposed, I think it's just a shift in geography. The second thing is in paragraph 35, I think it's important that you do what you say here, which is to ask comments, and I think probably the basis is okay, about why we are not making an amendment that the FASB is making explicitly to say it's focusing, you know, on go forward, because I think you're right that the other words in the standard point you that way, and so I think just making the point on the basis that we think it's unnecessary because it's clear from the other words is you know, a good trail to explain why we aren't making that change. So supportive of all the recommendations you have, but just think those two wording things should be baked in.
Okay.
So we call them both on questions.
So do we agree with the staff's recommendation?
All in favor.
Okay, thank you.
We've
got a couple more issues. So the next issue is the royalties constraint that deals with the sales-based and usage-based royalties exception. As I mentioned, this is an area where the ISB proposals and the FASB proposals were still converged, and we're recommending that we finalise the proposals, again subject to any small editorial or tidying ups of the wording. Perhaps one thing worth highlighting here is we have talked about the use of this in areas where the licence is the predominant item in a combined contract where there may be other goods or services. A few people did ask for some additional help with what's meant by predominant, one or two suggestions, but no consensus on what's, so there was no clear steer as to what people wanted in this area, so the staff recommendation is that we allow judgment in this area, which is quite a common thing. The other issue was, again, I won't dwell on this because we've had a few comments about asking for some additional illustrative examples to help things along with the pattern of timing, but again, we don't recommend any changes in that area.
Sue?
I don't object to the use predominantly, but I just wonder, given that last week we published an exposure draft which said to us predominantly means more than 75%, so it's definitely quantitative and it's ish north of 75%, I think people probably would now naturally read across to, oh, that's what the ISB thinks predominantly means. Now, I don't think that's necessarily a problem, but I think that if we meant something else, we probably need to either say we mean something different here or use a different word. Because having said that once, you know what people are like, they look for every little flag they can because they're forensic.
There is in the FASB's proposals, there was a slight difference in words where they talked about, again, added a little example to say that Perhaps it's an example is where the customer would ascribe significantly more value to the license than to the other goods and services. This is in paragraph 38 of the paper. I'm also not sure if we want a different level attached to something where we're elsewhere we've used a different example. Because, you know, we had this discussion at ASAF last week about how we use, you know, different words to mean the same thing or the same thing to mean different things. I don't think we should be going sort of eyes wide open doing that again. So I just wanted to, if we mean a big number like more than 75%, then so be it. But if we mean something different, or if the FASB are going to describe it in a different way, I think we probably need to be a bit wary.
My understanding is, but I might be wrong, that the FASB is not doing any more than what is in paragraph 38 of this memo, in terms of they're putting that colour into their text about what predominant means. So with that example, but I don't think that they are saying anything more specific about what predominant means. And that clearly there's some illustrative examples. I'm comfortable with that.
I thought we just need to be aware that's probably how it would be read by our stakeholders.
If we confirm that predominant is...
But even if something's been in an ED, you'd be surprised how often it comes back.
Because I do think it's about saying it's a license, or you have a combined license where still, fundamentally, it's a license.
I don't disagree with you. You just know what... You know what people are like. They're going to say, okay, firstly they've said it's a quantitative type of notion, and secondly it's north of 75%, so that's how I'll solve for it here as well.
Mary?
Point about the pattern of timing of recognition. I agree with the staff recommendation not to add, you know, further examples and trying to amplify that. But I have to say, when I looked at this example you included in paragraph 41, I did spend some time going, where on earth did somebody come up with VUA? You know, what did they read? How did they read it? And then when I finally understood what they were looking at with the interaction of the statement about royalties, about the later of, with the variable consideration and how the constraint, and how the variable consideration constraint caps the estimate of the consideration, rather than just affecting, you know, the timing. I was like, okay, I can see where they get this reading from. I'd like to make it clearer in the basis why we don't support that, and that we did consider the interaction of those two things, that there's not an oops waiting for somebody to find it. Because it took me a long time scratching my head to understand how somebody even came up with VUA.
They're sticking it, I mean, basically what you're doing there is you're viewing it as a constraint on the transaction price as opposed to the recognition of revenue.
Just quickly back on predominant, I think we're at the right level judgment. I mean, I think if you tried to subdivide it a little bit further, then you're just going to have 2 points where you're going to apply judgment as opposed to one. I think given the nature of what these things are and what's predominant in one customer set might be very different in another customer set, you know, and so on and so on. I think it's going to be a never-ending chase. I think you get judgment, and there's enough guidance around royalties and licensing in general, and the standard that they should sort of know what we're thinking of. So I think we're sufficient where we are.
Sorry, I forgot question on in-substance sale. Are we just planning to be silent? Because I struggled with, in paragraph 61, this is what wording we pick up in the documents, whether we're saying that thou shalt not, as in thou are prohibited from, or we're just not going to give any guidance or discussion around in substance.
Yeah. I think the wording in paragraph 61 is what was in the FASB's announcement of their decision. I think in this case we don't refer to in substance sales within IFRS 15.
So we're just going to be silent.
I don't think we need to say anything. Yeah.
Okay.
So the question is, do people agree with the staff recommendation to finalise the amendments to the application guidance and the
on the applicability and the royalties constraint, and not to change the scope for the in-substance sales.
That's the case. Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, the final area relates to the contractual restrictions. The issues that relate to the proposals in the exposure draft itself are in paragraphs 64 to 71. In this case, paragraph B62 of IFRS 15 states that restrictions of time, geographical region or use define the attributes of the promised licence rather than whether the entity satisfies a performance obligation over time or at a point in time. Some stakeholders had suggested that doesn't address the particular issue of how many promises there are within the contract relating to the license, which is step two of the model in determining how many licenses you might have within the contract. But the FASB did propose making some amendments to this area to try to clarify what's meant by contractual restrictions and the possible effects of them. They did propose some additional illustrative examples in this area, but the ISB in the exposure draft decided not to make any amendments or add any illustrative examples. The feedback from IFRS stakeholders generally supported the ISB's decision, but subsequent to the exposure draft, there's been a TRG discussion, which was in November of this year, which talked about related issues, one of which was about license renewals and whether whether a renewal of a license was just amending a time attribute or whether it was a distinct license. So that affects when you should recognise the revenue at a point in time. Would it be when the license is renewed or at the later date of the start of the renewal period, if it is later? The other issue then was a knock-on effect that there's some confusion between should a time attribute be treated differently from a geographical or a usage attribute. The discussion in the TRG, which is summed up in paragraphs 80 through 90 of the paper, suggests that for the renewals, again, people can get to different places with that depending on the facts and circumstances of the renewal agreement. Similarly, with the usage or the geographical region issues, the discussion is really around when you are looking at these, is it a restriction or is it a separate, distinct promise in the license? And again, I think different fact patterns were coming out through the discussion that suggested you could get to different places depending on different fact patterns. And again, one or two of the responses were, you know, well, if you took this example, which one or two of the examples that were in the TRG meeting or in the FASB's proposals, if you change the fact pattern slightly, would you get to the same answer or would you get to a different answer? In this area, the staff are recommending not to make any amendments to the standard itself, not to add in some additional illustrative examples, because we think this is an area where the guidance in IFRS 15 on looking at contract modifications relating to renewal periods, etc., it comes into play. The requirements for identifying the number of performance obligations you have is a step that you take before you get into the licensing requirements, because the licensing requirement applies to the license that you have, and if you have more than one license, then you look at it for each license and has that license got restrictions. But again, we appreciate this is an area that's raised several questions, and I guess the issue is whether you want to keep open the deliberations on this issue until the FASB have had time to complete. We understand they're doing some outreach on this issue as a result of the TRG. We're not sure what the outcome of that will be. So I guess it's a question, do you want to try and finalise the amendments relating to the exposure draft at this time, and then keep an eye on what happens with this, or do you want to keep open at this particular point in time until we get more information? With that, I'll be quiet.
I want to finalize. I agree with the points that we acknowledge that IS today has no guidance on that. We have a lot of people waiting for us to finally conclude the IFRS 15, and this will give the perception that this is an exposure draft and not a final standard. So I think we should finalize.
Is that the general feeling? That's the general feeling.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
But what do we do with the TRG stuff then? Do we just monitor it? Or, I mean, I think we finalize everything that was in our ED, you know, but you just said this is after the ED. You know, what do we do?
I mean, I think the staff recommendation is that we can perhaps just do some clarification within the basis for conclusion that would remind people of the step two issues that we're looking at, the general requirements of IFRS 15 for the model. This is on top of it. And yes, monitor what's happening, you know, finalise on that basis, monitor what's happening. If need be, then action can be taken at a later date. But I think that would be a case of if something significant comes up. Otherwise, we look at it again in the post-implementation review if that's necessary.
And I'm actually okay with that, but as I read paragraph 91 and 92, you wouldn't necessarily get that. I agree it's outside of the scope of this ED. I agree with that, and this came after. So we should finalize the ED. But if it's outside of the scope, doesn't mean it's dead. It just means we're not putting in this ED.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think in terms of... if we were to try and look at this issue, I don't think we want to look at it as a separate project, which would give the impression that maybe we are looking at this as a second ED and a separate proposal for amendments. I think what came out of the TRG discussion and some of the other discussions that we've had subsequently is everybody can come up with a slightly different fact pattern.
Yep,
and we're not going to satisfy everybody.
And that's it. As we talked yesterday, I mean, I would be very loath to build on what the TRG issues are. It will never end.
Yes.
I mean, whether it's geography, time, usage, I mean, given the nature of these things, I mean, keystrokes and these things around the world, there's no physical, tangible thing that you really got to deliberately move and stuff. And it's so easy to change intellectual property compared to physical property. And you're right, fact patterns will come, and those that are being forced to front-end licensing revenue that want it over time, and those that are taking over time that want it up front, you'll just keep sticking at the details and structures until you basically becomes effectively counting policy choices up and down. That's the only plausible outcome in these things. I don't think that's a good answer. I think it'll be very difficult to stop this, you know, if we start going down to rules-based or second or third level derivatives of it. I don't think we should do anything. Rely on the general model for what's a PO or what's when it's satisfied or whatever.
I think you're right. It's such, the licenses for IP can be so complex that you have to allow judgment.
Yeah, and you can make it complex or you can make them simple depending if you're trying to get to a particular accounting and reporting result. I mean, it's just not hard to do given the nature of what this is, and I think you'll never stop.
Yeah. Yep. We're okay with the, everybody agree with the recommendations? You just, yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Can you take a break?
Yes.
Yeah? 15
yes.
Minute break?
We're on a roll, Hans.
Yeah. I don't know how much longer does it be the other.
We're going to. I think. Three more days.
Yeah, let's take a break.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, you did that right. Mute.
Hands were on, doesn't go.
Oh, I see, sorry.